suggestion from Judy that I heard through Cliff that we open up an A Sunday, some Sunday, to a group discussion. And so although I'm prepared to throw a few things out if the group discussion doesn't roll, I'd like to, you know, once again accept Judy's suggestion and so all of us, this cup of tea is actually for all of us here. There's and the microphone here for all of us. Let's consider that this is not a Dharma talk being given by the Sunday designated discussion leader, but a chance for any of us to throw out comments or questions. And Judy, thanks for making that suggestion a few months ago, and for Cliff for passing it on. And if you want to give some background as to why you thought that, then feel free to.
I will. Well, I can't really remember when I said that to Cliff, but I can tell you some of the things that have been in my mind lately since I'm a regular Sunday person here. There is a sense of, how can I say it, the residents who keep this place going, you know, who carry out the functions of maintaining and serving food, and you know, without whom there would be no Jukoji, constitute almost a secret group or something. You know, they change quite often, and I'm never quite sure who are residents at any given time.
Neither do we.
Yes, and that doesn't help at all. You know, really. And so that's part of the background, you might say. There are a few people like me who come on a pretty regular basis who we consider ourselves part of the Sangha. And we feel like we know some of the residents, and, you know, we feel like we belong to a certain extent. However, there is a considerable, how do I put it? There's a sense of in and out. There still is. You know, the ones who live here are in. The ones who visit here are out, to oversimplify. And that's one thought I've had. Another thought I've had is Michael Newhall, who is our main teacher, who's right now absent because of his a severe illness in his family. I have been known to interview him, not in the group, but, you know, usually when he is slow to write something that he's supposed to write, I go and interview him. So I was thinking I would interview him, and my question would be, what is your vision for Jukoji? And I don't know if he was quite comfortable. I think I mentioned it to him once, and I didn't get much of a response. So I'm going to throw that question out here. And restate it in a way, because obviously each person has a very different experience, history, and expectation of what you would want from a place like this. So I'm going to perhaps mention a few questions. One would be, what is this place? I mean, just what is it, you know? I know Michael's very fond of saying this is not a monastery. And, you know, it's occurred to me, well, if it's not a monastery, what is it, you know? So is it kind of a, you know, Esalen Institute or something where people come and come on retreats, you know, in groups and that sort of thing, and the residents serve them food and clean their rooms and this kind of stuff? Or is it a something different, you know? Something either in between those two concepts, or perhaps entirely new. I really don't know. And so I think that a good way to start would be, what does each person here want, you know, when you come here? What are you looking for? So I'll stop there.
When I came here, it was because Abijah brought me here, and it was not for practice reasons. And I was not here very long when I realized that I was really here for practice reasons. I just hadn't known it before I got here. And what I loved about Jokoji was that it was a great place to practice and strengthen my practice. I knew that if I left after a short time, I didn't feel strong enough to carry through my meditation, carry through this path out on my own somewhere. And I felt like this place allowed me to give to something that was bigger than me and provide a practice. But that's what I was told, is that it was kind of like we were caretakers here. So, you know, while we had this wonderful opportunity to practice, we were providing a place for people to come and continue their practice. So that's how I've known it, and I know that there's talk of changes in the future, but for now, that's how I viewed it, and I've been really happy to be part of that and keeping everything rolling and keeping this space available and be able to continue my practice. And, you know, I've healed, you know, on mm-hmm. so many different levels mm-hmm. through being here. So I knew that that would happen for me. When I was so determined I had to stay here, I knew that it would be a place where I would get strong spiritually, mentally, physically. And, you know, so here I am, and I can tell you that that's what I've been excited to be part of. So that's where I come from.
Have pretty deep involvement here. And, you know, appreciate its long history, how it began, and the community in the hills, in the domes, and just the convergence of a lot of different groups from the land, the anarchists, and others that were here early on. Now we have this, and it's I think the residents can have, if they elect, have a monastic style of existence here in how they practice in the morning and in the evening. But it's I sense that this is really an important place for a lot of people, a lot of groups, and they come here and manifest their practice here. And like, we're going to have in a few weeks 35 people camping out and using the dorm and the facilities in silence. And just how that, providing a place like that for them is just, it's inconceivable. And so this place is, you know, that's kind of where the motivation to keep this place rolling is, to allow that, to facilitate that for groups, including ourselves. And so it's just a rich ground to be in. And there are, as far as the future, you know, there are, most temples have a cemetery, and we, or Memorial Garden, and we have that, you know, Coben's Memorial Garden, and further up the hill. And, you know, to me, that's part of the cultivation of a temple is that, too. And anyway, I could go on and on. You know, it's this place.
What is a temple?
It's a place of refuge, and I think for the people that come here and stay on their private retreats or come in groups, that this is just a refuge that really helps people's existence. So, like now, there are two or three guests, and some in silent practice, and so they can exist here safely with that. And it's a long, bumpy road to get here, and I'm surprised at all the people that keep coming down the road. And this place could be like Esalen. You know, we could pave the road, and it would be easy for people to get down here, and then this place would change. So that's the other thing, too.
Could you say anything about how it would change if the road were paved and et cetera, whatever?
The amount of staff that would be required would go up. The usage could go higher. The extent of the conferences that could be held here, or we've had some talk on the board about doing that. You know, treat this as an educational institution like is in our bylaws, and Coben had asked that of this place. So Peter does his nature sashin and explore the countryside, and that's one form. And talking others like Hollis had talked about one of Coben's good friends, and I forget his name, that helped train him when he was at the second university, when he followed Kotosawaki there. And he sometimes does conferences in Taos, New Mexico, or Santa Fe, and then we could have him here for a few days to talk about, he's a Buddhist scholar. But at this stage, we're not equipped to do that. You know, it requires more staff and people focused on that program. And so it remaining a fluid place for private retreats and group retreats seems to make good sense. There's a lot of people really appreciate being able to have this for a week or a month.
How about a first-time visitor?
What does a first-time... What is the vision that a first-time visitor might have? I think somehow even daring to answer that question would be on a retention meter. I'll mention one thing I've not heard, which is not to be... places like this, if I may say, often have a kind of energy. Sometimes one hears the phrase spiritual energy, and that can mean a lot of things, but I'm a simple person in Japan. I visited Chaco Canyon, and being there, amidst this place, one seems drained of the things in the world that we seek to distance ourselves from. So why is that? Is it something coming from the ground? Is it someplace special? Oh, I could talk on. I suspect there's something tragic, nostalgic, but also wonderful about appreciating the people that was once there in someone. somehow I think the cultivation of that kind of energy might be something to aspire to.
Okay, I'm the other probably newbie, so I'm going to say in contrast that what happened the very first time I was here, the first day, I actually came because of a one-day retreat that drew me in, and then when I sat in this zendo, and I closed my eyes in meditation, I felt something very specific, so I'd love to share it because it was very rich. I thought, you know, I've been in a lot of places, churches, retreat centers, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, I don't think I've ever been in a place that has simpler energy. It didn't feel crowded by like a huge legacy of lineages, and I mean, I know there's a lineage here, but it's like most of them just felt like I was getting all the energy that had been imprinted. And when I sat here, it was like, oh my God, this is the essence of what I've always envisioned Zen to be. I felt like I was in just literally just in nature at its most simple. So I just wanted to share that. I felt quite in love with it. And I remember thinking at the time, which was a couple of weeks ago, that this is exactly what I need in my life right now. The pureness. There was a pure simpleness about it.
Thank you. I'm relatively new as well. Sat my first sesshin here with Angie in August, and then was able to sit for a few days, and then sesshin last February, and I'm just back for a couple of days to do a little bit of work trade right now. And having come from a practice that was very, like a very rigorous Soto Zen training in my past, I found coming here to be really healing and just that sense of opening and nourishment. And really there, for me, there's a really feminine energy about the way the place functions. It feels very organic.
Did you say feminine?
Yeah.
Interesting.
For me, it feels very organic and grassroots. And, well, relative to what I came from, which was a school that was, you know, very regimented. If you weren't there by 5:45, the doors of the monastery were locked, you know, and you're up at this, there was never an option of taking a sitting out, you know, so that for me was more, a little bit more. So this has just been such a welcoming, healing place, but if I may, I'm curious about what your feelings are and what your needs are, because I sense that there's something there, and maybe other people are familiar with what might be there for you, but I'm not, and I'm just wondering what you feel and what you're needing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I am afraid of change. I'm afraid of this place changing. I think that's one thing that's going on in my mind. And frankly, I'm nervous because Michael, our teacher, has been gone for a long time. And I'm uneasy about that. And you said something about changes, you know. I'm not on the board. I didn't want to be on the board because, you know, somehow being on the board felt... there may be discussions like this happening on the board that I don't know about, but it felt like being on the board was somewhere... You go there and you decide what should be done and then you tell the residents to do it, you know, and I didn't want to be in that position. So in a sense, I've almost created my own sense of separation a little bit. So there's that, but also there is the fact that it is this place is not well endowed, you know, with a large amount of money, and it's, you know, in the bank anywhere, and there, you know, through the years there have been questions about its survival financially, and to me it kind of exists in a fragile condition, a little bit fragile because of that, because there's just not much money, and there are a few people that keep it going. The faces keep changing, you know, for the most part, but it keeps going. So I would like it to keep on being that way, and yet I'm also scared, you know, that it can't be, that it isn't going to keep going. And I'm sure you can say something about that.
First of all, Michael's been away for a long time, and but he has not been out of contact with many of us. So, both on the phone and through email, my sense of his involvement here is that it will remain strong. Mm-hmm. And this transition with his sisters, major event in his life, and he wrote that Trungpa's son came to visit her. Mm-hmm. To prepare. Mm-hmm. So it's an important time for him. As far as the vision for the future and like an endowment fund, it's been discussed and it could be implemented. There's a problem when you do it. And for those of us that like living on the edge, like you described your goji being, we like living on the edge. As soon as you have an endowment, is it 1 million or 3 million, then things change. So at some point, we'll need an endowment, but it will change how Jokoji is too by doing that in some ways, possibly. Maybe I'm exaggerating in my mind. You think that's just a good idea to get going on that? Then we'll address that at the next board meeting.
Well, I didn't quite get those last couple sentences. I think I'm blocking something.
Well, it just seems like if you develop an endowment and people put a couple $1 million into the endowment for this place.
What people are going to put in a couple of million? I mean, really?
Well, as soon as you say, maybe there's nobody out there, but as soon as you have the intent to have something develop, it usually arrives. That's always been my experience. Mm-hmm. So if we envisioned an endowment, you know, I've been a part of other nonprofits, and they had no endowment, they had no vision for an endowment, then they envisioned an endowment, and pretty soon it had $2 million in it. So there's some politicking maybe that goes on, but there's also, you know, as soon as you make a decision like that, then it's you've started a snowball rolling.
Yeah, I'm not advocating it. I'm just, you know, asking questions.
I'd like to hear your position though on something like that.
Whether there ought to be an endowment?
Yeah.
Really, I don't know, because I don't think I know enough. I like it the way it is. That's what I've been saying. I like it the way it is, and there is a fragility. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's a little sense of uh, You know, I guess it's just very zen, right? I mean, it says that it's going to disappear, you know.
It's not. The roots are strong in the Sangha, of rising for the support if it's necessary. It's just not necessary right now. Yeah. So it's like, you know, recently there was some wondering if there was any actual leadership here at Jikoji. And to me, the leadership exists out and around. And when the leadership needs to arrive, it's here. It comes out of the woods and it manifests here strongly. Mm-hmm. And so, in a way, my experience has been at work, you know, on the bus. When the manager's not there, it means things are going pretty good. You're doing a good job. Things are taken care of. If the manager's hanging around a lot, it's like maybe there is trouble. So a place like this encourages people to arise to the best of what they can offer, because there's endless things to do here, and both in a spiritual nature and a physical nature and a community nature. And so to me, it's a ripe grounds for growing decent human beings. And that's, on a day-to-day basis, to me, what this place is about.
Growing decent human beings. I like that. But you're not just talking about people who live here, right?
Both.
Okay.
All of them. Guests that come here, strangers that arrive. There have been some remarkable incidents that have, of some crazy guy comes here and and instill some fear in some people of some what he was suggesting doing. But one of the residents here had a clear, he had dealt with this kind of mentality before and just got this guy into a meditative state. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. It's almost like that guy wouldn't have driven down the road unless Robert was there for someone to actually deal with him. It's not like maybe others of us could have done something like that, but not me. Anyway, it's feel very fortunate to be a caretaker here. And when Ian was here, you know, we talked about the spaciousness of Coben's view, and it a great place to work on that. I think people are with you as far as how maintaining it, and I just see that there's momentum that keeps it strong right now, even though it may not appear that it's there. The support, the intentions, you know, with Cliff and Brian and Hollis and Dan and Tom, and you know, it just goes on and on. Jerry, John Lowney, you know, there's just all this real strength behind this place, and some of it more on a day-to-day basis, and some as on an as-need basis. But it's quite a wonderful assemblage of people that are in this Sangha, and you've seen a lot of them, Peter.
True. Beginning with the domes.
Really?
As Judy, sure. Yes. Yeah.
I'd like to say that when the times I've spoken with Michael, as my teacher, he was very clear, you know, I'm not your parent. I am not your, you know, guru. I am your spirit. Look at me as your spiritual, you know, equal. And it was beautiful to me. It was like, well, that's good, because that's exactly how I view you. You know, he's there to answer questions. He's got a wealth of wisdom and information. But I see that what he has created is people that just have a real desire for their own practice, and it's pretty personal. And when he's away, people continue their practice. You know, it's like, it's not just, oh, our teacher's gone, we don't have to, you know, it's like everyone's here because they want to be practicing. You know, and so it continues. And I think, you know, he's pretty much of a hands-off teacher, that what could really be wrong with that, because this is really a pretty personal type of practice to me. And I've heard of other teachers where, you know, their sangha falls apart when they're gone. Like, what can we do? What are we going to do with that? You know, and I don't feel that most people get that feeling when Michael's gone, because he's so laid back. He's always there, and he's still available to us if we need him. But I feel like everyone is able to, you know, it depends. If someone's looking for a parent, then they might be feeling like a lack. But I don't think that that's what they should be looking for in this practice. So to me, it's a beautiful thing to be part of, to see him be gone and to see everyone continuing with what they need, because we're not doing it for him. We're doing it for our own growth and our own practice.
I would add, as kind of a newcomer to Jikoji, came for my first Sunday session last year to hear Donald Lynn talk. But I have a piece of paper over here that was mailed to me when I lived with my parents in Los Altos, when this was called Bodhi Pacific. Huh. And it was a like 3-month long invitation for $400 to come up here and stay. And so for me, I had this deep sense of, you know, sadness and regret about not coming up when Coben was here, because I was in Los Altos at Haiku Zendo with him when I was very young, and then I sort of went away and never came up here. So last year was the first time I ever came up, and he had passed away. But I got the same sense that you did when I sat here, and I could sort of sense not only nature, but the sort of the spirit that's here with the people and just the quiet. And I could understand why Coben thought that this was a special place. And then I'm sitting with Angie, who's in San Jose, because she's a Coben student and was a fellow Dharma sister at the time in Los Altos, and is now transmitted. So I wanted to come to somebody who's in Coben's lineage, since he's not here. But she told me, in sort of my progression, to want to learn more and study harder, to come to a Seishin. So I came here in February and just fell in love with the place. And Doug was absolutely marvelous in giving recommendations about how to do Boryoki, or to help, how to hit the Han, and encouragement, and just the nature. And interestingly, from my perspective, Michael has not been present, even though I have great respect for him. I have learned from every single person here that I've known, and washing dishes and sitting across at meals, or seeing somebody cook, or how somebody sweeps. I learn constantly from every single person as a teacher, and feel like this place is a wonderful spot that someone can come to further their practice. But I really consider this to be another part of a large sangha that I belong to, and I'm really in love with it. So I'm happy to be here. I hope it doesn't become a large San Francisco Zen center, even though I have the greatest respect for Suzuki Roshi's, you know, foundation and Tassajara and all of that. This has a different sense. It isn't quite that polished retail sort of look of Soto Zen like you were talking about, and I kind of hope it stays that way. So I'm here to, you know, haul wood and chop and wash dishes and sit. So thank you very much. I love it.
I think we should honor the Tenzo's bell and the Zen story that we all heard about. You know, enough talk, let's have a cup of tea. In this case, we'll have a plate full of delicious food from the Tenzo. Thank you, Judy, for suggesting an open discussion, and for all of you who contributed. This is the kind of discussion that can continue during lunch. It is not in something Dharma talk that has right. to stay in the Zendo. So feel free to continue to share with each other, share with Judy comments on the question and that she threw out there. And after lunch, go for a walk in these beautiful woods that have nurtured Jikoji for over 30 years.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.